So we are continuing our series here in 1 Samuel, but that does not mean we are skipping an Easter sermon. We are continuing here because this chapter perfectly illustrates what Christ's resurrection has accomplished for us. And so we will read now from 1 Samuel chapter 30, and hear now the word of the Lord. David and his men arrived in Ziklag on the third day. The Amalekites had raided the Negev and attacked and burned Ziklag. They also had kidnapped the women and everyone in it, from the youngest to the oldest. They had killed no one, but had carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men arrived at the town, they found it burned. Their wives, sons, and daughters had been kidnapped. David and the troops with him wept loudly until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelite and Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, had also been kidnapped. David was in an extremely difficult position because the troops talked about stoning him, for they were very bitter over the loss of their sons and daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. David said to the priest Abiathar, son of Ahimelech, "Bring me the ephod." So Abiathar brought it to him, and David asked the Lord, "Should I pursue these raiders? Will I overtake them?" The Lord replied to him, "Pursue them, for you will certainly overtake them and rescue the people." So David and the 600 men with him went. They came to the Wadi Besor, where some stayed behind. David and 400 of the men continued the pursuit, while 200 stopped because they were too exhausted to cross the Wadi Besor. David's men found an Egyptian in the open country and brought him to David. They gave him some bread to eat and some water to drink. They gave him some pressed figs and two clusters of raisins. After he ate, he revived, for he hadn't eaten food or drunk water for 3 days and 3 nights. Then David said to him, "Who do you belong to? Where are you from?" "I'm an Egyptian, the slave of an Amalekite man," he said. "My master abandoned me when I got sick 3 days ago. We raided the south country of the Kerethites, the territory of Judah, and the south country of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag." David then asked him, "Will you lead me to these raiders?" He said, "Swear to me by God that you won't kill me or turn me over to my master, and then I will lead you to them." So he led them. And there were the Amalekites spread out over the entire area, eating, drinking, and celebrating because of the great amount of plunder they had taken from the land of the Philistines and the land of Judah. David slaughtered them from twilight until the evening of the next day. None of them escaped except 400 young men who got on camels and fled. David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken. He also rescued his two wives. Nothing of theirs was missing, from the youngest to the oldest, including the sons and daughters of all and all the plunder the Amalekites had taken. David got everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, which were driven ahead of the other livestock, and the people shouted, "This is David's plunder." When David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to go with him and had been left at the Wadi Besor, they came out to meet him and to meet the troops with him. When David approached the men, he greeted them, but all the corrupt and worthless men among those who had gone with David argued, "Because they didn't go with us, we will not give any of the plunder we recovered to them, except for each man's wife and children. They may take them and go." But David said, "My brothers, you must not do this with what the Lord has given us. He protected us and handed over to us the raiders who came against us. Who can agree with your proposal? The share of the one who goes into battle is to be the same share of the one who remains with the supplies. They will share equally." And it has been so from that day forward. David established this policy as a law and an ordinance for Israel, and it still continues today. The word of the Lord. Okay, kids, all eyes and ears up here. I'm going to tell you a story that you may have heard me tell before, but it's been a while, so maybe you forgot it. When I was a little boy, I went with my dad to another church, and he had brought the teenagers from our church to that church, and they had a time they were playing games together and things like that, and it was a kind of rough part of town. And some of the kids from that church thought, "What is this little 6-year-old doing here?" They were not happy that I was there with the teenagers. And there was a kid who was approaching me, and he clearly was going to hurt me because he didn't like that I was there. And as I saw him coming close, because he was a lot bigger than me, my eyes got big, and I started to breathe heavy. And all of a sudden, a voice from behind me said, "If you hit him, kid, I'll hit you back." And one of the teenagers from our church had seen it happening and was there ready to fight for me. And I was so glad to hear that voice because I could not have fought against a kid that much bigger than me. And we see today in the verses that we read, God fights our battles for us, even though we don't deserve it, because our battles come from our own sin and from listening to lies that the world tells us and from giving into what the devil wants us to do. And we should never do any of those things, right? We should have to fight that ourselves. That makes sense, right? But God doesn't put us there. He let Jesus come and fight that battle for us and to even die the death we deserve and rise again so that we could live forever. Is that what sinners deserve? Not even close. But is that what sinners get from God? It is if they trust in Jesus. And so we see God today in these verses, he fought David's battle for him. And because God fought for him, David won. And Jesus has fought for you. So you can know your sin is paid for. The world can't stop God from loving you. And the devil, who does not want you to love God, does not want you to go to heaven, he can't stop you from getting there. So we should thank the Lord that he loves us enough to fight our battles for us. All right, so in our text today, I said, again, this is a beautiful picture of what Christ accomplishes for us in his resurrection. And so we see first, as I just told the kids, God defeats our enemies for us. We have to define enemies well to understand that, but he defeats our enemies for us. Second, he takes back what we've lost through our sin. He takes back what we've lost through our sin. And finally, he does this for the weak and the undeserving. He does this for the weak and the undeserving. So first, he defeats our enemies for us. So David's in a very difficult position, and our text has gone back and forth by looking at David as a picture of Christ and sometimes as someone who needs Christ. And he's kind of in both sets of shoes in this text today. David is both one dealing with the consequences of his own sin, but then being used by God to do things that Christ will one day do for us. Why are these the consequences of his sin? Well, why were he and all his troops gone from home so that it was the town was so easy to burn and plunder? If you saw last week, it's because he had decided to march with the pagan Philistines against the people of God. Now, God's mercy prevented him from doing that. But the only reason this town got burned and plundered and everyone kidnapped is because David was gone trying to fight against God's people, relying on himself and not the Lord. So this is the consequence of David's sin. And you see the response of his men. They want to stone him for having done this. So how does God deal with the consequences of our sin? And then particularly, how does the resurrection of Christ deal with the consequences of our sin? Well, first we see God do something that David did not deserve, nor do we. He goes and defeats our enemies for us. So I'll read it again in verse 6. David was in an extremely difficult position because the troops talked about stoning him, for they were all very bitter over the loss of their sons and daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. And so we've seen David trusting in himself and in his strength and plans and whatever else. And now we see him return to where he should. No, I have one hope, and it's in the Lord. He will defeat my enemies. He will set this straight. It can't be me. And so we see David right away. I'm turning to the Lord. Right away, what does he do? bring me the ephod. Again, we don't know how that worked, but somehow through this ephod, God would answer questions for people, not for people, but for the king. And David does not say, okay, how can I go defeat these people? He says, Lord, can I do this? Are you with me? And the Lord says, absolutely. It's a guarantee. Because I'm with you, you'll win. You'll get everything back. And so, again, back then, when God's kingdom was physical and a theocracy, God's enemies were physical, and God's people's enemies were physical. So you won by slaughtering them, okay, as God commanded you to. We have very different commands today when Paul says in Ephesians 6, your battle is not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual powers. So we can't slaughter them, nor are we called to, but we are called to wage war against sinful powers. And so God helped David defeat his enemies. How does God help us defeat ours? Well, we have three, and we talk about it often here, but that's because it's a very important thing to remember. Our first enemy we often talk about is our flesh, our old heart, our old nature. It is very insidious because it wants to be on the throne. It hates the idea of glory going to God. It wants everything to go to self first, and that's an easy thing for us to listen to and often to give into. And so Christ, in his death and resurrection, has defeated our old hearts. We see this in Romans chapter 6. Paul says the entire reason why we are why we are motivated to not just say, okay, cool, I'm justified by Christ. Heaven's guaranteed. Okay, cool, time to put my feet up. Now, the reason we don't do that is because the old heart that would choose to live that way has been killed with Christ. It's not gone yet, but it's dying. And instead, we have a new one that actually wants to love what God loves as a way to thank him for Christ. And so Paul says this in Romans 6, chapter 3. Do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ were baptized into his death? We were buried, therefore, with him by baptism into death, in order that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we too might walk in newness of life. For if we have been united with him in a death like this, we shall certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his. We know that our old self was crucified with him in order that the body of sin might be brought to nothing, so that we would no longer be enslaved to sin. For one who has died has been set free from sin. So you have been set free from the sin that enslaved you. Because, as Paul will say elsewhere, I have been crucified with Christ. I no longer live. Christ lives in me. So that doesn't mean you don't sin anymore, but it does mean that sin is no longer your master, that you cannot escape from. And it does mean that you are guaranteed to one day be freed from it when the Lord returns, or when you return to him. And so we know the end of the story. When we are fighting against the sins that entangle us and wondering, how have I done this again? Why do I think these things? Why do I say these things? Why do I act this way? We can know this is not your end. You are going to be free. And so don't act like a slave when you know that freedom is guaranteed. Live in light of the freedom that's been won for you once and for all by Christ, who died and rose again and defeated that sin that entangled us. So he fights that enemy for us, but he also fights against and has defeated for us the world. It doesn't mean that we should look at the world as people we're against. If you're not a Christian, I'm against you. No, it means that we know the world is going to be against us. We should expect that. Christ said, listen, they hate me. They're going to hate you. Don't be surprised when the world is worldly. Right? Paul says, you're going to be the stench of death to them. Because you are saying, I have one hope. I've been set free by Christ. And that's the only hope anyone has. And therefore, since they aren't hoping in that, they are reminded of the death sentence that hangs over them, that God has put on them. So, of course, they don't want to be reminded of those things. But Christ has told us, even when it gets rough and the world oppresses you, I have conquered the world for you. So in John 16:31, Jesus answered them, do you now believe? Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come, when you will be scattered, each to his own home, and will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me. I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So when we are being oppressed or persecuted for what we believe, remember, Christ has already defeated those powers. They aren't gone yet, but their end is guaranteed. You know the end of the story. Christ's resurrection is the proof. We are going to live forever, free from all the effects of sin and this world. But we also have another enemy that opposes us. It's the powers of darkness. And very often what the powers of darkness do is emphasize what the world and the flesh want. Listen to your old heart. Put yourself first. Listen to the world. Don't believe in something eternal. Just seek temporary pleasure. And because we already have two voices saying those things to us, the third voice is often very effective. And the third voice also tries to tell us, by the way, even if you wanted to trust in Christ, he wouldn't save somebody like you. He might save others, but you are too evil for him to save. But we have covered this passage a couple times in 1 Samuel because God has demonstrated in the opposition of Saul that he makes a spectacle of the powers that oppose what he's going to do through Christ as Shepherd King. And we see it here too. What did Christ do to defeat our enemies for us, to defeat the powers of darkness? Colossians 2, verse 13, and when you were dead in trespasses and in the uncircumcision of your flesh, he made you alive with him and forgave all your trespasses. He erased the certificate of debt with its obligations that was against us and opposed to us, and has taken it away by nailing it to the cross. And having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. So any reason that the powers of darkness would have to accuse us, Paul says, that's already paid for. And anyone who is going to oppose that and act like they can still try to challenge God's verdict, he's made a public spectacle of them. Really? You thought you could shut this down? The cross and the resurrection completely overturned anything you thought you could do. And yes, I made a mockery of those who would seek to undo the verdict I have passed over my children. So each of these enemies, we have zero power to defeat. You on your own cannot change your heart. You on your own have nothing to do with the opposition of the world, and you most certainly have nothing to do to defend yourselves against the attacks of the devil. And David would have had no hope whatsoever had God not been the one fighting for him to say, go, I'm with you. That's why you're going to win. And so we know the end of the story. We will win because of Christ. And though we are not the ones ultimately defeating those enemies, as we'll see in the text, we are still the ones who get the spoils of victory because of God's grace to us. So when you're in the midst of battle, cling to this. You know the end of the story. Don't give in to despair. Don't rely on self. Rely on what the Lord has promised he will do for you. But God also takes back what we have lost. And as we see David do this here, we need to remember how much we have lost through the fall, but also how much we lose every day because of the sin we commit. How much we lose just in our own souls, how much we lose in our relationships because of our sin. It's a devastating thing. But we don't give in to despair because God is going to gain back more than what we've lost. So we see David here in verse 18. David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken. He also rescued his two wives. Nothing of theirs was missing, from the youngest to the oldest, including the sons and daughters, and all the plunder the Amalekites had taken. David got everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, which were driven ahead of the other livestock, and the people shouted, "This is David's plunder." So the Amalekites had raided more than just David's people. So they had more plunder than just what they had lost. So David recovered more than what they had, and now they had who knows how much, innumerable spoils of victory. And again, we have lost so much in the fall, but lost so much in how we contribute to the sinfulness of this world every day. But we're going to get back so much more, because God doesn't just fight our enemies and put us back at zero. He recovers far more than what we have sacrificed through our sin. We see Paul talk about this in the language of Romans 5, where he says that how much more will Christ's work accomplish compared to what we have lost? And how much more will he do even through our sufferings? So don't look at sufferings as only a minus. God is going to do so many great things through them. But then again, in Romans 8, Paul will say, the sufferings we're going through now aren't worth comparing to the glory that's going to be given to us. So much more is coming. God's getting it all back for us, even though we lost it. We don't deserve to have it back. But that's what he's promised to do. I think the language we have in 2 Corinthians 4 is one of the most powerful depicting this concept. In verse 16, Paul says, therefore, we do not give up. Even though our outer person is being destroyed, our inner person is being renewed every day. For our momentary light affliction is producing for us an absolutely incomparable, eternal weight of glory. So we do not focus on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. This idea of this weight of glory, we have two things that are being weighed in the balance. Paul says our momentary light affliction and then an eternal weight. I mean, think about what that would do to a scale, right? This weight's eternal. It's limitless. Now, we know that Paul goes out of his way to comfort sinners who are struggling in this broken world. So when he says momentary light affliction, he's not just being a stoic or an Eastern mystic saying, you know, power of positive thinking. What he's saying is, truly, if we think about it, what we're going through for our 80 plus years compared to an eternity of no pain whatsoever, those scales are going to break. Put those two on there. The eternal weight of glory is far greater. And so think about what is unseen. Focus on what is eternal. God is going to give you back far more than what you lost through the fall and through your own sin. Because Christ has lived and died and risen again for you. So you get credit for his righteousness. You get credit for having paid your debt. And he has defeated sin and death for you so you can live forever. So as we see God enable David to recover far more than what they lost, we see Christ do that on an eternal scale, which gives us perspective in the midst of our battles. It is hard, but I've got a hope that can't be lost. And I have so much more I'm looking forward to that I need to let that shine light on the darkness that I face now. And finally, we see that God does this for those who are weak and undeserving. And in this situation, we had 600 men going to fight the battle, but 200 were too exhausted to go fight. They're weak. They couldn't do it. And so they sat back with the supplies, and the 400 went with David and had a masterful victory, got everything back. And the text says, sorry. That the weak and worthless men with David said, they cannot receive any of the plunder. We earned this. They don't get any. And we see David, again, acting very much the part of Christ here, saying, no. Those who did not go into battle will still get credit for the victory. We saw David do that with in the battle against Goliath. All the weak people who are willing to let him go die for them got all the spoils of victory. And these weak men, who were weak, walk away with just as much plunder as those who were victorious. And so we need to realize that I can't count on the credit for Christ's work based on having done enough to deserve it. No, what he has done by living for me, dying for me, and rising again for me is coming to me because I'm weak. If I could have done it, God wouldn't have sent Christ. What a waste of Christ's life if I could have done this myself. So I don't think too many of you are saying, yeah, I could have been my own Messiah. I think I could have done enough good deeds to be saved by them. But when we are living in ways that are entitled, which we all struggle with, which our old nature loves, we are wondering why God hasn't given us our due. What we're saying is we have done enough to deserve reward from you, and then you're not delivering. And we see here is, no, we are the people who did not go into battle, but nevertheless receive the spoils of victory. And when we think about the bigger picture, we were not just the weak people, we were the enemy. Paul says that clearly in Romans 5. While we were God's enemies, Christ died for us. And somehow we, the enemies, are receiving the spoils of victory, an adoption by the king we fought against. I hope that strikes you as bizarre, wonderfully bizarre for the rest of your life, and more so as each day goes by, that's the kind of people Christ died for and did so willingly, calling it all joy to bring us to himself. So as we consider this picture here, remember, in the midst of the struggles you have, God is fighting your enemies for you and has already defeated them. And God is going to take back all you have lost through your sin and give you far more than you can imagine. And don't think that comes to you because you're deserving. We see God does this for those who are weak and undeserving. And that makes that gift all the more precious.